Hello and welcome to Yesterday's News, the podcast that brings you the biggest stories from this week in history. I'm Joe Forrester and I'll be guiding you through the historical headlines from the earth-shattering to the absurd. And my guest this week is presenter Simon Harkness. Now remember, you can follow the show at Very Old News and please do get involved. No tweet is too trivial for our attention. On with the show. First up, we're in Bavaria, where a historic war crimes trial is getting underway. Next, we head back to England to hear the unusual tale of a royal imposter. And finally, we have some shocking news from the president's visit to Dallas. It's the 20th of November 1945, and you join us in the market town of Nuremberg in Germany, where some of the most powerful men in the Nazi state are about to go on trial for war crimes. After the collapse of Nazi Germany and the total military annihilation of the Axis powers, 24 Nazis are about to stand trial to answer for their part in the Second World War and its atrocities. Head of the prosecution, Robert Jackson, had this to say.
The privilege of opening the first trial in history for crimes against the peace of the world imposes a grave responsibility. The wrongs which we seek to condemn and punish have been so calculated, so malignant, and so devastating that civilization cannot tolerate their being ignored because it cannot survive their being repeated. That four great nations, flushed with victory and stung with injury, stay the hand of vengeance and voluntarily submit their captive enemies to the judgment of the law is one of the most significant tributes that power has ever paid to reason.
The Nuremberg trials were born out of a sense of public outrage that had grown towards the end of the war as the Allies had liberated concentration camps in the west and the Soviets had come across the extermination camps in the east. As evidence of the horrors of Nazi war crimes mounted, people wanted justice, but the victorious powers disagreed about how to get it. The Brits had apparently wanted to execute those responsible on the spot, while the Soviets typically favoured the idea of show trials followed by execution. However, it was the Americans that got their way to try the most prominent Nazis with a fully legitimate legal process. Due to the sheer number of languages being spoken, with the British, French, Soviet and Americans all playing a role, the trial was beset by logistical problems, not least when Rudolf Hess, Hitler's one-time right-hand man, feigned amnesia, and Hermann Göring, undoubtedly the most prized among the defendants, refused to accept responsibility for his actions, with the phrase, "I was just following orders," becoming synonymous with shirking obvious guilt. However, in October 1946, the defendants were sentenced, with 12 getting prison sentences, including Hitler's Minister for Armaments, Albert Speer, and his strange sidekick, Rudolf Hess, while the remainder, including Göring, were sentenced to hang. However, Göring never faced his fate, as he was found dead in his cell on the morning of the execution, having taken a cyanide capsule he must have secreted about his person. Despite the fact that the Nuremberg trials were a landmark in justice, as people were tried for crimes against humanity and unjustly causing war, entirely new concepts, it is perhaps Göring's suicide that is best remembered, as just like all the leading Nazis, Himmler, Goebbels and Hitler himself, these men who caused the deaths of over 50 million people and the suffering of several millions more, evaded justice themselves. Next up, you join us on the 23rd of November 1499, where we're about to witness the hanging of a chancellor from Belgium. Or is he? Joe Forrester has more. Thanks, Joe. That's right, I'm here at Tyburn, where Perkin Warbeck is about to be hanged for impersonating Richard, Duke of York, and trying to usurp our king, Henry VII. Hang on, a hush has fallen over the assembled crowd. It appears the condemned is about to say his last words. This is the best bit.
"A bunch of nasty Yorkists, if he might be revenged upon the King of England, and so against my will made me learn English, and taught me what I should do and say. And after this they called me the Duke of York, the second son of King Edward IV.
There you have it, Joe. The last words of Perkin Warbeck. Thanks, Joe. Yes, Perkin Warbeck was a funny old case. In the aftermath of the Tudor victory over Richard III in 1485, the new King Henry VII had long been bricking it at the idea of some imposter trying to pinch his throne. So when Perkin Warbeck rocked up in England in 1495 and again in 1497, Henry was understandably a bit miffed. However, I'm sure he felt a great deal better when he captured Warbeck and then paraded him through the streets of London en route to the Tower. But why was this Flemish merchant such a threat to Henry VII? In one of the strangest tales of English history, this obscure stranger was said to be Richard, Duke of York, youngest son of King Edward IV. Ring any bells? No. One of the princes in the Tower? Okay. For anyone still not following, after Edward IV died unexpectedly in 1493, his rightful heir was his 12-year-old son, also called Edward, and then his younger brother, Richard, who was 9. However, in one of the most famous mysteries of English history, these two lads disappeared, presumed to be murdered by their uncle Richard, who promptly became Richard III. However, no one actually ever saw the bodies, so this led to rumours that one, if not both, had escaped. So when Perkin Warbeck rocked up a few years later, he claimed to be the younger one, Richard. Get it? Good. This may seem ludicrous, but Warbeck received support from Margaret of York, the boy's aunt, King Charles VIII of France, James IV of Scotland, and his claim was taken so seriously that he even attended the funeral of the Holy Roman Emperor as Richard, Duke of York. The problem for Henry would be that given that he'd taken the throne from Richard III, who wasn't even the rightful heir himself, a live and kicking son of Edward IV could provide a dangerous rallying point for all Yorkist supporters. However, after being captured, Warbeck gave a confession. Apparently Henry VII was even in the room, such was his desire to make sure this imposter said the right thing. Under duress, Warbeck said he'd been coerced into pretending to be the rightful king. Now this sounds plausible enough, but ask yourself, were these immensely powerful people really prepared to let some random guy from Belgium be king just so they could oust the hated usurper Henry VII? Seems a little far-fetched. So I think some of them at least must have believed Warbeck was the real deal. Warbeck's end didn't come in a spectacular show trial, but in slightly less dramatic circumstances, when, after all the torture of course, he was actually treated rather well by Henry, who let him stay at the royal court. However, after 18 months, apparently not realising he was the most spectacularly lucky man in all Christendom, he tried to escape. He was recaptured on the 23rd November 1499 and promptly hanged, mostly for being a pillock and not knowing when to quit. And thus ended the strange tale of Perkin Warbeck. And finally, it's the 22nd of November 1963, and we have shocking news from the US as we're hearing reports President John F. Kennedy has been shot and killed. Let's go live to the scene.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago. Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas, but we do not know to where he has proceeded. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th President of the United States.
That's right, 46-year-old President John Fitzgerald Kennedy was shot and killed as he rode in an open-top car alongside his wife, Jacqueline. At 2:39 p.m. that afternoon, Vice President Lyndon B. Johnson was sworn in as president while on board Air Force One, with some 30 witnesses present, including Jackie Kennedy, who was still wearing clothes stained in her husband's blood. Kennedy's state funeral with full military honours followed on November 25th, with 99 national leaders in attendance. The shooter was Lee Harvey Oswald, a disaffected former Marine who'd spent time in the Soviet Union. Oswald was arrested on the 23rd, but not before killing an officer who tried to question him, the often forgotten Officer J.D. Tippit. However, the very next day, as Oswald was being escorted through Dallas Police Headquarters and with live TV cameras rolling, he was shot and killed by a man who emerged from the crowd, Jack Ruby. Jack Ruby had minor connections to organised crime, sparking a rumour mill that he had silenced Oswald to cover up a larger conspiracy with Chicago mob boss Sam Giancana at its centre as the Mafia sought to stop the Kennedys as JFK's younger brother Robert was cracking down on organised crime. Robert too was assassinated in 1968. Ruby, however, contended his motive had been rage at the assassination and he had acted alone. And one of many more recent theories alleges that Oswald had been trying to assassinate Texas Governor John Connally, who had also been riding in the car, and in fact JFK was an accidental victim. Ruby, incidentally, died of lung cancer while awaiting trial. The Warren Commission of 1964 concluded that neither Oswald nor Ruby were part of a larger conspiracy. However, in 1978, the House Select Committee on Assassinations concluded Kennedy was probably assassinated as a result of conspiracy. With Oswald and Ruby dead, we'll probably never know if the death of John Kennedy was the act of a lone gunman with a grudge, part of a conspiracy, or merely an accident. But the legacy of both the man and the crime are assured. Kennedy himself was forward-thinking, a civil rights advocate, and a man who tried to build bridges with the Soviet Union at a time when nuclear war was a real danger. His murder, on the other hand, is arguably the most memorable, iconic, and shocking single action of the 21st century. So there you have it. That is it for this week's stories. And back again, repeat offender on yesterday's news, presenter Simon Harkness. Simon, hello.
Hello.
That was very chirpy.
Yeah, I feel chirpy.
You look chirpy.
Thank you.
I feel slightly off my A game.
You've done incredibly well.
Thank you. I should say the reason this week's podcast is late is because I've had toothache, which makes you sound like a bit of a pussy. I've broken bones, I've ripped ligaments, I've torn cartilage. Nothing compares to the pain that I've experienced this week having a fucking toothache. It is I remember my mum had it while I was on holiday as a kid, and I was sympathetic, but I thought, come on, it's too... Oh my God, it is just... I mean, I've been off my tits on codeine all week. That's why it's late.
You're a trooper.
I'm a hero. I mean, we're talking about Kennedy.
Yeah.
I'm a hero for our time. Fuck Mandela.
What did he ever do?
Yeah, hey? Exactly.
20-odd years.
Anyone could sit in that cell. Did he have a blinding toothache when he was meant to be on the radio? No, dickhead. So, an interesting week in global history. Shall we start with the Nuremberg war crimes trials?
Please, yeah.
Please, yeah, I love a war crimes trial. It's my favourite type of trial. So everybody knows the phrase, the Nuremberg trials.
Mm.
How much did you know about them?
Well, I knew it was in Germany.
Good.
I had a feeling it was about the Third Reich.
Yes.
But I did get a bit confused. When you mentioned Bavaria, my brain instantly went, oh, beer.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I assumed probably some beer was consumed.
Well, you're probably not during the trial. Well, by the prosecution.
It wouldn't have needed to have been.
Yeah, I doubt that the Nazis who were on trial for crimes against humanity were knocking back steins of lager. Yeah, I went on a college trip to Nuremberg to see the parade ground. That's where those big famous pictures of, or videos even, of Hitler overlooking like a sea of 300,000 people. You must have seen that footage from the early days of the Third Reich. That's a parade ground in Nuremberg, and it's still there. And it was made famous in a film by a female filmmaker called Leni Riefenstahl called The Triumph of the Will. And Nuremberg is one of the most beautiful, charming cities I've ever been to.
Really?
And we went at Christmas and the Christmas market was going on. So the teachers kept having to go, we're here because it's where they had the war crimes trials, remember? So we go, but look at this lovely snow globe. It's like a chocolate box town. It is like something out of like a fairy tale. But they had these war crimes trials there.
Yeah.
Now, basically, the war crimes trials were landmarks in human history because nobody had ever been tried firstly for making war before, so for unjustly making war. It was kind of, that's what states did, that's how they resolved their differences. But in this case, what the Allies were saying was, you basically heaped all this misery on different people, and crimes against humanity was an entirely new accusation because of what had been uncovered in the last year of the war. So i.e. especially from the Russian point of view, they were coming from Moscow towards Berlin and they liberated Auschwitz, for example. So people kind of knew that the Nazis were doing something awful. But bear in mind, until that point in 1945, and you've seen the footage of naked people behind barbed wire, piles of bodies, nobody actually knew what was going on. And the whole planet kind of went, shit.
Yeah.
And Churchill wanted to have all the leading Nazis who they captured shot without trial. He basically said that's it. But the Americans argued, well, that makes you as bad as them. You can't sink to their level. You need to make them, not make you as bad as them. They have to face justice.
Mm.
But not all of them did. Because as I said, Hermann Göring killed himself.
Yeah.
He took cyanide on the morning of his execution and evaded the hangman. I mean, was that something you knew about?
I didn't, no. Just what a bastard, really.
Well, this is the thing, yeah.
How can you do such a dreadful, inhumane thing and then not even really
be held accountable for it.
Yeah.
Selfish prick.
I don't think any historian has ever written, think about Herman Goering, he's such a selfish prick. But he was, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But that's the thing. And I mean, none of the leading Nazis, Himmler killed himself before he could be captured.
Goebbels
famously, he and his wife Magda killed themselves and their six
and their
children.
Kids, yeah.
Hitler killed himself, Eva Braun, and his dog.
That poor dog.
Killed his dog Blondie. Yeah, because the dog's not a Nazi. The dog's just like, this is the guy who throws my tennis ball. I love this guy. No one can say to the dog, this is arguably the man who's responsible for more human suffering than any other. He's like, no, he's nuts. The guy gives me bones. None of them really faced justice, apart from Albert Speer, who was the armaments minister, and a guy called Rudolf Hess. Now, Rudolf Hess was Hitler's number two, and the guy that Hitler dictated Mein Kampf to in 1924 when they were both banged up in Landsberg prison together. The most interesting thing about Rudolf Hess is in 1941, believing that Germany shouldn't be at war with Britain, Rudolf Hess stole a plane, flew to Britain, crash-landed in Scotland, was promptly arrested by the local constabulary, who were like, who's this nutter?
Who's this prick?
Is this fucking prick, right? What are you doing, Dickhead? And it turned out it was the second ranking Nazi. So he was basically going, I'm Rudolf Hess, I'm here to make peace with the English. Hess thought he could fly to England, land on his Todd, and go to Churchill, listen, I've been thinking, this is all getting way out of hand. Can't we all just cool our boots? And obviously he was thrown in the nick. Bizarre behaviour, isn't it?
Yeah, but I admire that behaviour.
Yeah.
To have the arrogance and the kind of, you know what? Yeah, fuck it. I'm going to sort this out. I'm going to fly to London.
Yeah.
Actually, oh shit, I've missed. I'm now in Scotland.
I'm in Scotland, yeah. There's some really angry Rangers fans. Yeah.
What a legend. I mean, obviously not, but...
But that's the thing, if he wasn't a Nazi, he would just be like a hilarious story. But you think, what is going on in these people's minds? I mean, the Nuremberg war crimes trials, I'm not going to dwell on it. There's not really much to say, to be honest. It was an attempt to bring to justice arguably the single greatest period of atrocities in human history. Mm. Speaking of bringing people to justice, Perkin Warbeck.
Mm.
I mean, you heard his statement.
Yeah.
Recorded live from the scaffold in 1499. Yeah, so Perkin Warbeck, is this a name you'd ever heard?
No. By God, what a good name it is.
What a good name. And also, what a colourful little life.
Yeah.
Even if you do end up getting hanged, he must have been thinking there, just like, I'll tell you what, I crammed a lot in. Yeah. So he's either a Flemish merchant who, originally the Irish, apparently turned up in Ireland and they went, you look a bit like Richard Duke of York. I don't know how they'd know that, because A, no one has seen Richard Duke of York since he was 9.
Yeah.
B... They didn't have fucking Twitter. You know what I mean? Why would these randoms in Ireland have seen a kid who was last seen in the Tower of London before he was even 10 years old? So I don't know where they got that from.
Right.
But then his aunt, the King of France, the King of Scotland all went, you might just be Richard Duke of York. No one went, hang on, who the fuck is this?
Yeah.
But it's either that or he was Richard Duke of York. And that's my thing, because I just think, would all these important people really have... got on board with this conspiracy? Because at some point someone would have gone, guys, this is just mental. Look, we all hate Henry VII. That's a given. But this twat, like, seriously, we're going to let him be king. What do you think? Do you think he was the real child who'd been on the run since the age of 9, or a Flemish merchant?
Firstly, I think him and, was it Hummels, the other guy?
Well, Hummels is a Bayern Munich centre-back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Who's that guy?
Not, the other pretender to the throne.
No, the guy we were just talking about, the German bloke who flew to Scotland.
Hess.
Yes. They have very similar...
I think him and Schweinsteiger, am I right in thinking? Yeah.
They have very similar outlooks on life. Just like, yeah, grab it, do it. Go to Scotland, go to Ireland, pretend to be... I don't really know. I kind of think, fair play to him, either way, it's a hell of a story. The Chancellor in me thinks, you know what, yeah, let's just say he was a Chancellor.
Yeah.
It's like, that's more of a romantic idea in my mind.
Yeah.
Than actually being him and then getting killed for being someone.
This is why I don't think he was Richard Duke of York.
Right.
Yes, he was captured and he was tortured. Natch. Henry VII made sure of that. But after he was tortured and he confessed and said, oh, no, I'm just a Belgian, he was then allowed to live at the royal court. As if Henry VII had thought that this was actually the rightful heir to the throne, he'd go, I don't give a shit what he said. Just people fall downstairs every day. Know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
But he didn't. He just went, oh, look, let him. It's just a little Belgian lad. Just let him live at court. And then he tried to escape and he was like, fuck's sake.
He really should have just thought, you know what? You've done all right for a little Belgian lad.
Yeah.
You've made it to Ireland and now you're in the royal court. Just chill.
Because if you were Richard Duke of York, okay, fine, but at least you're alive. If you weren't, you're
the luckiest Belgian in the history of Belgian people.
You're just a random Belgian dude who, even if you look at it on the face of it, okay, you didn't get to be king, but you still get to live in the English royal court, whereas before you were just a merchant just toddling around Antwerp doing bollock all. But then someone tried to convince him in 1499 to escape, and he went, yeah. I'd be like, do you know what, mate? It's all right. I've got PS4.
It'll be equivalent.
What's the equivalent in those days?
A busty maid.
Yeah, just a buxom wench to ravish at his convenience.
Yeah.
Both their convenience. Obviously, it's consensual. let's not get bogged down in Tudor sex crimes that didn't happen.
So you think he was...
I think he was a pretender. What do you think?
Yeah, chancer. I want to believe he's a chancer. Otherwise, it's just a bit grim.
Well, I mean, what happened to them anyway is grim. A 12-year-old boy and a 9-year-old boy were smothered to death. Basically, because
by Richard III, who I saw David Tennant play, and they kind of touched upon that.
Whether he ordered it himself or it was his best mate, the Duke of Buckingham, basically what it is everybody thinks that Richard III did it because he wanted to be king. If he did do it, which all the evidence points to, essentially what looks like happened is because there was, after Edward IV died, his wife or widow's family were very powerful in the court, and whoever controlled Edward V, the 12-year-old, would have control of England because Edward V wouldn't be able to assume power in the country until he was 18. So basically, they hated Richard III. Edward IV's widow's people on one side, Richard III on the other side, this poor 12-year-old lad in the middle. And once Richard got hold of him, his only option was to not leave him alive. In a very unusual situation where it's kill your nephews or die yourself, which comes up very rarely in life. Now let's get on to this is what I've been trying to rush through. Because you're well into your 60s and stuff, aren't you, in America?
Yeah, well, last time I was here, we spoke for about an hour about the 60s in America.
We did. And yeah, I noticed you crowbarred a James Dean reference in. Yeah. Don't think that got past me.
Thank you.
If someone just said to you, the Kennedy assassination, what does that evoke?
A lot of mystery. Kind of think a lot of the Soviets, because obviously Lee Harvey Oswald spent a bit of time in...
He lived in Minsk, yeah. Didn't he?
Minsk,
which is in Belarus, as it's now called. Well, Alexander Kleb.
Yes,
came from.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah. The only reason anybody in England knows what Belarus is, common sense seems to dictate that he was a lone gunman with Soviet sympathies, and he basically, as these lone nutters do, thought that was the solution. Is that what you believe, or do you believe one of the many conspiracy theories?
There are so many conspiracy theories that I think if you believed every one of them, you'd probably go insane.
Well, I'm completely obsessed with the Mafia, and always have been.
Like, so your favourite film's Goodfellas, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. I think, yeah, and Godfather Part 1, the director's cut, actually, is in the top five.
Okay.
And the rest of that top five is fleshed out. I mean, we're talking Star Wars.
Yeah.
Probably the second Bourne film. But anyway, okay, we're moving on. I'm obsessed with the Mafia. So for me, the idea that organised crime might have killed him is incredibly attractive.
Yeah.
But I mean, what do you think?
So you think that the Jack Ruby theory appeals...
That's what I think is most interesting.
Okay.
Because there's one stage that the Mafia were the single biggest shareholder in the US economy. For example, they were more important than General Motors. So it's like the equivalent of Google and Microsoft and Apple are the biggest companies in America now. And you go, oh, who's number four? An Italian-American crime syndicate? It's like, sorry, what?
Yeah.
That idea is insane. Now, do you think that has any weight?
I think because it's just covered in what ifs and maybes. I don't think we'll ever really...
Yeah.
No, there's no doubt that JFK, although he was an excellent president and stood for a lot of the right things, I think he was quite shady.
Well, his old man was a bootlegger, wasn't he?
Really?
His dad was a racketeer.
No way.
And an actual organised crime figure who used to run illegal booze from Canada to New York. So at the same time as Lucky Luciano and Meyer Lansky and Bugsy Siegel, the original organised crime figures, he was also there as part of an organised crime gang.
Wow, okay.
And then his sons went on to become statesmen.
Wow. If I was to be pushed, I would just believe the Lee Harvey Oswald one.
The lone gunman.
You see it all the time. In America, you do get mentalists.
Well, sadly, it's happened. There's Thomas Mayer, who's very recently being convicted and sentenced to life in this country because of the Joe Cox thing. So you do see that people just
just
get these ideas.
Just an incredibly interesting part of history.
Yeah.
Because it's just so like WTF.
That day, I mean, even if you condense it down to that second, I think it's the single most iconic moment in the 20th century.
Yeah,
I can't think of another moment that has such resonance. You agree?
Completely, yeah.
Also, the fact that it's filmed.
Yeah.
News cameras there, which is just, it's mental. I mean, I can't think of the other contenders. I mean, an atom bomb being dropped on Hiroshima, like that's quite an iconic world-changing moment.
Yeah.
A president being shot and killed on television.
To then be followed 2 days later with another live broadcast of the shooter of the president getting shot himself. It's mental.
Fuck me. Can you imagine that? If you were watching the news and first, I mean, the prime minister was shot and then the person who shot the prime minister was shot on the telly again. Mm-hmm. So I remember talking to my nan about it and she was doing the ironing when she saw it.
That's the most British thing, isn't it? Maybe we had our Lee Harvey Oswald moment a bit too soon. Maybe now wouldn't be the worst time for a certain man.
I mean, what you're suggesting is that President-elect Donald Trump be assassinated by a lone gunman.
Could you see something like that happening?
Yes.
I fucking could.
I must say, I don't want it to happen because I don't wish death upon anyone. And I genuinely mean
that. Yeah, of course.
But I did think when he got elected, I thought, somebody might just go off the reservation and do this. That's the way politics is. It's at boiling point. And it feels like having buried my nose in enough history books, there's certain like points, especially in the 20th century, where everything feels quite frenetic.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Urim, when we spoke about the Cuban Missile Crisis. So that's a point. The start of the 1930s in Germany and the Wall Street collapse and the Nazis coming to power and that kind of thing. There seems a sort of point where it's like, it goes normal, 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 what the fuck?
Yeah.
And everything just goes mad and anything seems possible. It seems like we might actually be living through a time like that.
JFK got bumped off for lesser things.
The theory I was reading was that Harvey Oswald was trying to assassinate the governor of Texas, John Connolly.
Yeah, see, I don't buy that at all. Not for a second.
Well, apparently what had happened is on the day of the murder, an FBI agent searched Lee Harvey Oswald's flat, found his diary. On the diary were a list of four people whom he wanted to assassinate. None of them was JFK. His name wasn't written there, but written at the top of the list with a knife with blood dripping from it written next to it was Governor Connolly. And the reason being that Lee Harvey Oswald basically had received a dishonorable discharge from the army, gone to the Soviet Union. When he came back from the Soviet Union, he wrote to the governor, because he was from Texas as well, and said, look, can you get this off my record? Otherwise, I'm going to find it bloody hard to get a job in this country. And Connolly didn't. So that's why he started a vendetta against him. And Connolly was in the same car as Kennedy. So what this FBI agent says, who teaches a college course and tells all his students this, is that he thinks Oswald was trying to shoot Connolly, missed, and accidentally committed the most famous crime of all time.
Yeah.
And killed the president.
But then he never once admitted to that in any kind of interrogation. And he was trying to blame the... Didn't he call himself a patsy or something?
Oh, what? Harvey Oswald? Yeah. Well, that's the thing. His interrogation as well. He basically seemed to suggest that he was part of a wider conspiracy.
Mm.
But that also is what a random nutter would do.
Yeah.
But like from anything from the mafia made me do it to fucking aliens made me do it. It's like, no, mate, you bought a rifle and you're mental.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, one of the things that we do now, instead of trivia, is I've introduced idioms.
Okay.
Okay, I like an idiom. Last week we talked about daylight robbery, which we discovered came from a tax imposed by William III in the end of the 17th century, basically on windows. So the more windows you had, the more heavily you were taxed.
Yeah, the windows tax.
Yeah, the windows tax, meaning that people coined the phrase daylight robbery because people were forced to brick up their windows because they couldn't afford it. So it's like he was stealing daylight.
Wow.
This week, Bob's your uncle. So you heard the phrase, Bob's your uncle?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Who hasn't, okay? It's a mainly British expression. Mm. For our non-existent American and continental listeners, I'm afraid this just won't scan.
But then we have spoken about JFK at length.
We held up our end of the bargain, dickheads. Think of the amount of times we mentioned Belgium. Not a single person in Belgium's listening. I'm done with you lot. I'm done with Belgium, that's it. You can do what you want. Sit at home, eat waffles.
Chocolate.
Chocolate.
Beer. Leffe.
Yeah, go and, do you know what? Have a leffe and some chocolate and a waffle, but don't listen to this podcast because you're not welcome. It's so controversial, just banned an entire country. I know, I like Belgians. I only know one.
Yeah.
And he's really nice.
They strike me as either just don't give a shit about anything. Much like the Dutch.
Well, the Dutch are among my favourite people on earth. Because, and I know this is a cultural stereotype, because it's legal to smoke a bit of weed in Holland, everybody's kind of relaxed all the time.
Yeah, that's like, pretty much right.
Because they basically just like legalised hookers and weed, and it's just like, everyone's just quite chilled out. I went over and did a job with some Dutch astronauts last year, obviously. I was making a video of some Dutch astronauts. Not a porn film or anything. This guy was telling me, he was just like, so yeah, after school every day we used to sit outside the brothel, have a cup of coffee. He's not from Brooklyn. But he's just basically saying he used to sit outside the cafe and outside his school, which was next to a brothel. They used to have a couple of joints, chat to the prostitutes as they came in and out. I thought, that's why you've got such a liberal view on everything. Because he wasn't saying he used prostitutes, but he was just saying that...
He went and chatted to him.
But he ultimately just feels that perhaps life is just a bit too short to worry about that kind of stuff. And I appreciate that attitude.
Yeah. I'm probably right.
Well, because people just get on their high horses about things. And we've been talking about right-wing politics, obviously, and it's happening in France at the moment, and it happens in America. And it's like, think of the things you're angry about, e.g. you're angry about gay people. Why? Mm. How is letting people be happy bad for you?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a very funny thing, the idea that anybody would care.
Yeah.
It's like when you hear someone being racist, you sort of think, you have to sort of go back in your head to work out the thought process. It's very odd that that bothers you, mate. I don't see why you're asked about it. But hey, I'm a great guy. So, Bob's your uncle. Would you like to know where the phrase Bob's your uncle came from?
Yes, yeah, please enlighten me.
Oh, mate, you're about to be fucking well enlightened. So, in 1887, British Prime Minister...
Bob.
In 1887, British Prime Minister Robert Gascoigne Cecil appointed his nephew, Arthur James Balfour, as Minister for Ireland. So the phrase, Bob's your uncle, was coined when Arthur referred to the Prime Minister as Uncle Bob. It's become a phrase sort of synonymous with something being very easy, because obviously he was able to become a cabinet minister because his Uncle Bob was the Prime Minister. So it's easy when Bob's your uncle.
That makes sense.
Mind suitably blown.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Simon, thanks for coming in.
That's all right, mate.
That's all we've got time for. A heavy session, wasn't it? Like, laden with big news.
I feel whenever I come in here, I just spout off shit, so I do apologise.
But there's a lot... We both speak a lot of bullshit. But I feel some important ground has been covered. I might go more lighthearted next week and sort of shy away from the serious news. More things about people like Perkin Warbeck, like Belgian chances. In my new podcast, Belgian chances. Welcome back, by the way, the people of Belgium. I mean, if you have been listening, you're more than welcome, obviously, all of you. But please don't let anyone from Luxembourg listen, because seriously, those guys.
Why?
I don't know. I just wanted to pick a country to victimise.
Okay, cool.
I'm going to pick one each week and just ban them and sort of see what the reaction is. I have no opinions on Luxembourg, whatever.
No, it's
bit
one
small.
Of those, one of those places. Oh, do you want to go to Luxembourg this weekend? No,
obviously not. Also, I don't think anyone's ever said that. Do you want to go down Luxembourg this weekend? Yeah. Cool. So, Simon, thanks for coming in.
No worries, mate.
It's a pleasure.
You.
I'm sure we'll see you again very soon. And remember, you can follow the show at Very Old News. Please do tweet us. We will always get back to you. No tweet is too trivial for our attention. And I will see you next week. Thanks for listening. You and me got a whole lot of history. Just loads of aspirin, mate.
Feeling pretty good, lad. Okay, let's give it a go.
This may seem ludicrous, but Warbeck received support from Margaret of York, the boy's aunt, Charles VII of France. This may seem ludicrous, but Warbeck received support from Margaret of York, the boy's aunt, Charles of France, King Charles of France. Options, always options. King Charles VII of France. King Charles VIII of France. We could go on. I was thinking about the 27 Club the other day. Okay, so you got Winehouse, you got not Kendrick. Anna Kendrick is still alive. You got Winehouse, Hendrix,
Cobain,
Jim Morrison, Janis Joplin. Five people who all died at the age of 27.
Yeah.
And sort of the way most people look at that is they go, oh, well, I'm 29, I haven't achieved as much as them. But I got further.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying.
And you haven't ever taken heroin. So
never.
I feel like you've properly beaten them.
Yeah, not once. Smashed down a lot of Nurofen this week, but no, not heroin actually, no. would have helped.
Yeah.